The Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast features people from the real estate community sharing real stories about their struggles, pains, and even losses during their own real estate journey. We share these real experiences so you can learn from them and build a successful journey of your own. Now, here's your host, Cody Lewis, one of the managing partners at Vindu Capital, located in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I'm very excited to have all y'all, but let me tell you, I'm even more excited to have our guest on today. He is the creator of Wealth and Freedom Nexus, John Rittgarn. Thank you for joining us, John. How are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thanks for joining us. I know you got a lot of stuff going on today, so really appreciate the time and you coming in and chatting with us. For those that are maybe hearing your name and voice for the first time, hopefully not, but if they are, sure, would love to know a little bit more about where you're from, how you got into real estate, and what kind of real estate you're a part of these days.
Sure. Grew up in Southwest Minnesota, currently live in Marshall, Minnesota, southwest corner of the state, home of Red Baron Pizza and Schwan's Ice Cream. Usually that kind of gets some people get an idea of where it is, geographically speaking. Been in Marshall for 18 years now. So, and started in real estate, be 5 years ago last month. I did things a little bit differently. I started with the fourplex and then worked my ways down to single family, where most people do single family, then work their way up to larger units. So, you know, I just like to do things a little differently.
Listen, I think you buried the lead on the Baron Pizza thing. I know we're here to talk about real estate, but for those that have listened to the show, I could talk about pizza all day. And I'm pretty sure most of my childhood revolved around Red Baron Pizza. So,
okay.
not a sponsor of the show. But if anybody's listening from Red Baron Pizza, we're open to it.
Gotcha. I still got some connections there, so I'll see what I can do.
There you go. Well, hey, listen, you know, it is interesting. We always appreciate everyone's background. Everyone has a unique background and brings a ton of different experience and dynamics to real estate and what they're doing. It is interesting that you said that you went kind of what most people would consider the opposite direction, multifamily down to single family, but I know that would probably be a whole can of worms, but we're here to talk a little bit about things that you've experienced in your career that have been bumps, challenges, failures along the way that could help our audience who are typically maybe looking to get into real estate or been in it for a short time, and helping them understand some of the things that they could look at and then learn from some of the mistakes that we've made along the way.
Sure. So yeah, like I mentioned, I started with a fourplex. That was actually our first real estate investment. And I say our, it's just my wife and I, but she's kind of the silent partner she jokes about. She's just like, yeah, you take care of everything. So, but it was back in 2014. I just kind of had an awakening moment. And it's like, you know, I've, you know, hustle and grinding for quote unquote the man for, you know, years and years now, working 40, 50, 60 hours a week. And, you know, there's got to be more to life than just, you know, slaving for a paycheck, basically. So I started with podcasts and learned about real estate. Okay, what makes a good real estate investment? You know, check the boxes, 1% rent to value, newer construction in a quiet area, you have a good property manager available, et cetera, et cetera. And so I had my list of criteria and my wife was like, well, you're never going to find that here. And lo and behold, we're in the MLS. There was a fourplex that popped up. The numbers made sense. And then it was just a matter of, okay, you know, we're talking a $300,000 property. How do you put a down payment on this thing? And I always think back to Robert Kiyosaki's quote, don't say I can't afford it. Ask how can I afford it? So did a little brainstorming, networking, you know, thinking outside the box. It's like, okay, you know, need good five-figure down payment. Where is this going to come from? And turns out I learned you can pull money out of a Roth IRA tax-free. And I didn't know that. And okay, I've had this Roth for 12 years at the time, 13 years. And okay, started when I was 19, had a sizable chunk in there, took that out. And that was the down payment of our first property. And that kind of started from there. And as we're recording this, soon to be closing on a duplex down in Iowa, which would be units 12 and 13 of our portfolio. So
nice. Congratulations.
Thanks.
It's interesting. I would imagine there are people listening to the show that have been in your shoes before. They're doing the research. They're on YouTube. They're on Bigger Pockets. They're listening to podcasts. You know, all the resources at our disposal. Mm-hmm. What ultimately was it for you that allowed you to make that jump and move forward with that? Because I know a lot of people hesitate with that. And we've heard that from others on the show as well, that once they did make the jump, they were happy they did. But oftentimes I think people struggle with just making the jump. They're so used to that W-2 and the paycheck and all right. that stuff. What was it that allowed you or made you make that jump and really the straw that broke the camel's back there?
I think the biggest thing for me was with my previous W-2 job, we had a change in ownership and going from an employee-owned company to a company owned by a private equity company, quite a bit of a, you know, 180 as far as, you know, taking pride in your work. You go from, hey, I'm an employee owner to I work for a bean counter that if they could save 16 cents doing some obnoxiously stupid micromanaging process, they would do it.
Right.
So, you know, it's one thing if you're in a job, you absolutely love it, you know, do something you love, you never work a day in your life, some people say. When you get to the point of, okay, now I'm not liking my job, there's got to be something out there. And the appeal to me was just the passive income coming from real estate, you know, every month from rent checks, as well as the wealth building behind that with, you know, building equity, appreciation, and then of course the tax benefits as well.
John, you have properties out there. Are you managing these or do you have property managers on them?
No property managers for all of them. When I first pitched this to my wife, her grandpa years and years ago as a landlord inherited a property. That was her stickler. She said, well, I support you with this, but we're not going to be the landlords. They're going to be professionally managed. I'm like, I'm totally with you. I also look at it as more of a time commitment of, yeah, you pay that property management fee, but you end up buying back a lot of your time. And I know friends that do everything themselves. One flat out said, yeah, I think I can do 15 units total that I can manage on my own. Well, you know, when you're utilizing property managers, then you're not trapped by that. You can leverage up more.
We've also heard, and I'm interested to hear your take on this. People, even though they're using property managers, mm-hmm. it's still an active investment strategy. You're not passive. Yeah. So we've talked to people in the community. I've talked to investors. I've talked to others that have been on the show. Tell me about the difference of what really passive investments are versus active investments as it pertains to like the deals that you have and the assets you have, because we know people perceive and think, well, if I just put property managers on them, it's a passive income.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it frees up your time. I think you have to look at your managing the managers, and obviously you're still involved, but it can still, you know, free up more of your time. And the way I look at it is I'm hiring experts that have a lot more, you know, experience in it, where, you know, knock on wood, I've never had an eviction or anything to deal with. But if that were to happen, okay, I have property managers on my team. They've dealt with, you know, tens, dozens, maybe even 100 evictions over their career. So I'm leveraging their expertise to, you know, get a better outcome that way.
Right. Well, I guess even with your property managers, you mentioned it, it's managing the manager. So you're still having to do management. It's just right. at a higher kind of higher elevation, you know, you're at a 10,000 foot view instead of
right.
boots on the ground. So you're still having to be active in your properties and working through those.
Yeah. Typically, you know, everyone's a little bit different, but a lot of property managers, they'll have, you know, a threshold. Obviously if it's emergency, they'll get it, you know, taken care of right away. But if it's a repair, you know, $400 or $500 or less, they're just going to go ahead and take care of it. Otherwise, like a couple of years ago, we had an AC unit go out. They call us up, hey, this is what's happening. What do you want to do? Okay, get us some quotes, review them, get back to them. So it's, you know, not 100% hands off, but at the same token, I'm not, okay, I'm going to hop in my car, I'm going to drive the property, I'm going to YouTube how to fix an air conditioner and replace it. So,
yeah, I mean, you're not getting that 2 a.m. phone call anymore. Yeah. You know, the property manager handles that, but to your point, it's not completely passive. Like there's still active engagement in that. Mm-hmm. With your portfolio, what's been the biggest hurdle or challenge that you've had to overcome with the properties you have under management now? What is kind of that biggest thing that's been a headache for you guys?
Probably the biggest thing is, I'd say, keeping a lid on or managing the property taxes. The biggest thing, so with our first property, our fourplex, you know, I'd done all the research, I'd read books, you know, listen to podcasts, and it's like, all right, I got the numbers dialed in pretty well. Well, then the first year we got a huge jump in the property tax bill. I'm like, what in the world is this from? The value didn't change. Well, the previous owner lived in one unit, ran out the other three. So they had a large homestead exclusion. Once it became non-owner occupied, you lose that. And to this date, after 7 years of, you know, real estate education, I've only come across one PDF that actually mentioned, make sure to see if there's a homestead exclusion that's going to impact your taxes. So that right off the gate was a, you know, shocker. Following year, property didn't change value, but had another big jump. Well, the assessor decided to redo their percentages of their differences between the taxable market value and the sale market value. Used to be, give or take, $100,000 property, they put an $80,000 taxable market. Well, then they moved it to about a 95%. So property didn't change, but the taxes went up. Fast forward another year. Okay, now I got an assessment for the school going in. And here we are 5 years later. I'm like, okay, we bought the property. Property taxes were $3,600. Now it's about about $5,700 a year now. So,
yeah, I mean, taxes are always those things that can creep up on you, and it can totally ruin your pro forma if you're not familiar with the taxes in the area, how they're calculated. Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes I know, like, we're in multifamily, taxes are assessed and it's different county by county, state by state.
Right. Yeah.
That, you know, you could be sitting on a property and it looked really good pro forma, but if you didn't know that when you buy the property, the taxes are going to get reassessed.
Right.
That could totally kill your pro forma. You could go from cash flow positive to cash flow negative real quick.
Exactly. Well, and a lot of people, like you said, they look at the pro formas. They might even go on the county website. Okay, taxes are whatever, $1,000. Yeah, but the taxable market value they have is $50,000. When was the last time the assessor was out there? Well, if you're buying it, especially with this crazy market that we're having now, you know, if you're buying it now for $100,000, $120,000, $150,000, you're probably going to get an assessment within a year or so, and you're going to have a big jump in the property taxes and have you factor that into your pro forma.
Well, and I would imagine too, I mean, you're close, you're kind of southwest corner there in Minnesota. I would imagine y'all are looking in a couple of different states and counties and stuff like that. And we are too. And I can just speak for the Carolinas specifically. How taxes are assessed are radically different between the two states.
Yep, exactly.
So you really have to do your due diligence
mm-hmm.
to make that happen. You know, I think a lot of people get hung up on renovations and construction, which obviously that is a big aspect, but the taxes could be the easiest slip up, I think, mm-hmm. in a lot of pro formas that will cause you to lose the most sleep at night.
Right. Well, and you know, even my background, you know, currently I'm a real estate agent as well. So I help other investors looking for their first property. Just last month, I had another client that was looking at a property. Oh, he didn't think the taxes are too bad. I'm like, well, let's look at the assessments. And sure enough, the city had redone this, you know, curb, gutter, sidewalk, sewer, everything under the sun. It's like, you know, you're looking at a $13,000 assessment on the property. So have you factored that in?
Right. Well, and good on you for that. I know there are some people, you know, and it, I guess it depends, but sometimes agents or brokers don't always put that information in there because they want to sell the property and stuff right. like that. So one of our running themes on the show that was started kind of early is trust, but verify. Mm-hmm. Right. So look at all the documentation that you have, but also go verify that information yourself.
Right.
As an investor, that's part of your due diligence, whether it's your money or investors' money.
Yeah.
You have to do that due diligence.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes even just having a candid conversation with the county or the city, like, okay, the taxes are fine. Ran the numbers, assessment value's fine. Everything's checking out. Maybe just check with a city engineer. Hey, are there any upcoming projects in the next 12, 24, 36 months that could you know, be a potential impact on this. So got to kind of look at it from a future standpoint as well as the present.
Well, and you bring up a good point, knowing the market, but also knowing the people in the market and the roles that you need to know in those markets is so vital. So we've talked to people that invest out of state a lot. And I know people that invest out of state. So if it's not you, if you can't put your boots on the ground, please find somebody that can and that understands what that market is and who the right people they need to talk to are, you know.
Exactly.
Well, John, I can't thank you enough for coming on board. I think that was a lot of good things, some different nuggets in there for folks to pick up. So please rewind, or I guess we don't rewind anymore. Back up the audio. You can tell what years I was born. Back up the audio and listen to it again, because John has some good nuggets in there, especially around the taxes and not always being able to find that information readily available. John, I can't thank you enough. For those that do want to follow up with you, maybe are looking in the market and want to work with you, what's the best place people can find you?
So I always joke, you can just Google my name. I'm not hard to find. There's only two Rick Garns in the entire world. So I'm pretty easy to find. I'm not a John Smith or anything like that. You can find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, my webpage, wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Otherwise, you can just type in my last name, rickgarn.com. That will redirect you to my website as well, and have a lot of recommended podcasts, PDF downloads, and other free resources anyone can use.
Perfect. I've been to a lot of those. Folks, please go check it out. He does have a lot of great content there, so please go take a look. John, again, thank you for joining. I appreciate the time and the experience and sharing all your knowledge.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, Cody.
Absolutely. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch everyone next time.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast with Cody Lewis. Be sure to subscribe today on your favorite podcasting platform so you can catch every episode of the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast.